You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in, everybody. The 2016-2017 season. Guys, it is finally here. Within 24 hours, it's going to be Rockets Media Day. Within 48 hours, training camp will have officially started. So I'm going to lead off this show with the happy note that the 2016-2017 Houston Rockets season, it's essentially underway. Guys, we have made it through the void. We have actual basketball to discuss. On that happy note, I'm Ben Dubose, your host. This is Locked On Rockets. And today's show is brought to you by SeatGeek. Download their mobile app for the easiest way to buy tickets, and the promo code LORockets will get you a $20 rebate on your first purchase. So as we kick off this new season, we've been spending a lot of time the last few days breaking down the Rockets' depth chart and looking at all the intricacies and nuances that may go into this upcoming training camp. We've even been breaking down the likes of Chinonu Onuwaku and Pablo Prigioni, and these are guys that are unlikely to even play. But there is one question that we haven't spent too much time talking about, and I know for a lot of fans around the NBA, it's the single biggest question about this franchise. That question, simply, how good is James Harden? I have touched on it at times, but I really haven't said a lot lately because I'm pretty sure all of you know where I stand. James was a legitimate MVP 2 years ago, as voted on by the players, and some of his numbers actually got even better this past season. He was the fourth player in NBA history to average at least 29 points, 7 assists, and 6 rebounds per game. Only 3 players in the history of the game, including Michael Jordan and Oscar Robertson, had done it before James. So that's how good he was. Harden, he's simply one of the best offensive players that I have ever seen. And his defense, while he's certainly inconsistent, I've seen enough that I do trust him to hold his weight, assuming that he's healthy. Now, Harden's not ever going to be a stopper on the defensive end given the workload he has on offense, but he does have the skill sets and the instincts to be at least average. And when you combine average defense with his game on offense, which is out of this world, that's a potential MVP every single year, assuming that he's healthy. While Harden was slow defensively out of the gate last year, my view is that that was largely due to his offseason ankle injury. By the time he rounded into peak physical fitness in January and February, he looked a lot better to me, strictly going by the eye test, on the defensive end. And personally, I expect that trend to continue in this upcoming season, since Harden looks to be in better physical shape than ever, and because, well, he's finally got more help on the offensive end of the floor. With Ryan Anderson and Eric Gordon on the roster, it's a safe bet that Harden's extreme usage on offense should go down at least a little bit, and that's going to give him more energy to use on the defensive end of the floor. Now that's my view, and I don't express it that often because I think most of you know where I stand. I am aware, however, that it is not the only view. There are many excellent basketball minds who are much harsher on James than I am, and one of them is Matt Moore over at CBS Sports. Matt had a great piece published this week on where Harden is at this point in his career, and he really made a great case for Harden being both underrated and overrated at the same time. If you haven't read it already, again, it's Matt Moore's piece at CBSSports.com. I strongly urge all of you to do so because it's a great read. And Matt also has plenty of video film of Harden in there to better illustrate his points. If I had to give a brief summary, it would be this. Matt says that Harden is absolutely underrated by a portion of NBA Twitter that fixates on him for a bad six-second vine on defense and his tendency to draw fouls on offense. You know the guys he's talking about with that. They share a vine, they laugh at him, they just call him a foul magnet on offense, and they disrespect his game. Among those, yes, he's absolutely underrated. Matt makes a pretty compelling case in his big article previewing James Harden on why Harden is just an out-of-this-world player on the offensive end of the floor in essentially every possible area. In other words, it's not just drawing fouls, it's not just the threes and getting to the basket. He's an amazing player in so many different facets that he's going to be, at least on offense, a top-five player every single year. Now, the flip side of that, of course, is the defensive end, and Matt makes the case that a lot of people following the Rockets, including potentially me, are giving Harden too much of a pass. And he makes the point saying that it's not just about Harden's individual shortcomings, but that as a leader, Harden really has a responsibility to try and help fix problems elsewhere. And those unexpected problems elsewhere would be the regressions last year from the likes of Trevor Ariza and Corey Brewer. The reality is that you can make a pretty compelling case for both sides. I've said my case plenty of times, but as far as the skepticism, you can certainly point out that for the vast majority of two of the past three seasons, Harden has clearly been a below-average defensive player. And I can point out reasons for it, but until he proves otherwise, it is fair to have concerns. To give both sides of the argument, I'm going to have Matt Moore join the show momentarily. For now, I'll start by saying this. This is absolutely going to be an enormous year for the career trajectory of James Harden. I see a lot of Rockets fans who seem to be somewhat underwhelmed heading into this year, seeing as how the team probably can't compete with the Warriors for a title. But if you want a reason to watch the Houston Rockets this season, this is it. Even those people who defend Harden, including myself, we've got to acknowledge that barring severe injuries, there are no more excuses. He's got the additional help on offense. He's got a coach he likes. Dwight Howard is gone. Harden looks to be healthy and in great physical shape. If Harden is truly an MVP-level player moving forward, and that's something the Rockets need to find out, then really, James has no excuses not to produce on both ends of the floor this season. So even if the Rockets can't win a championship ring this year, I think we're still going to learn a lot about what their championship potential is and what route Daryl Morey has got to take moving forward as he continues to build this roster. I'll get to Matt in just a second, but for now, I do want to throw a quick shout-out to our friends at SeatGeek. Because, well, if you want to watch James Harden and these Rockets play, including the season opener on Sunday, October 30th against the Mavs, SeatGeek is a great place to buy your tickets. And really, buying tickets online for sports, it's been confusing for quite a while. It's hard to find the best deal for the right game, like that season opener, the regular season opener, I should say. And a lot of the older ticket sites, they just don't want to change that because the confusion works to their advantage. But SeatGeek is different. They've come along and created an amazing app and website that makes it easier than ever for fans like us to buy and sell tickets. Really, everything about SeatGeek is designed to make life easier for sports fans. They do all the price comparisons for you by searching multiple ticket sites to ensure that you get the best possible deal. They also want to help you get the most bang for your buck, and they do that by grading every ticket on the site. Every ticket gets a grade from 1 to 100, with 100 being the best deal, so you can very easily find any underpriced seats and get the best deals for your budget. Now, here's the important part. To get your $20 rebate on your first order of tickets, here's what you do. Download the SeatGeek app. It's simple. You just go and search SeatGeek, and then go to the settings tab in the app and click add a promo code, and then enter the promo code LORockets. SeatGeek will then send you $20 in the mail after you've made your first ticket purchase. So remember, download that SeatGeek app and enter the promo code LORockets today. So with that said, I don't want to delay any longer. Let's go ahead and get to Matt, and I'm going to get him connected right now. All right, now we've got Matt with us. You can, of course, follow him at cbssports.com where he writes about the NBA, but you probably know him best as HP Basketball on Twitter, where some Houston fans are convinced that he's out to get them. On that happy note, welcome in, Matt.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Sure. I'm going to bury the lead a little bit and go off script. The last few minutes I've been talking James Harden and your piece yesterday about how he's simultaneously underrated and overrated at the same time. Get to it in just a second, but literally as we're taping this, we have the breaking news of the Rockets trading Michael Beasley to the Bucks for Tyler Ennis. I know you are a diehard Beasley fan, so I want to get your reaction to it. And also, Tyler Ennis picked 18th in the 2014 draft. Is he still an intriguing player at all? Just curious your thoughts on the deal.
You know, Tyler is a Syracuse point guard, and that's problematic. And all the guards at Syracuse have struggled in the NBA. It's very hard to find one that has succeeded. Not really great at any one particular thing, and that causes issues to a degree. Though, like, there's some skill there. There is some ability, and if he can, you know, kind of can make the most of it. And I also think, like, with Houston, they just could use the depth. Like, that's just the thing. They could just use the depth. And Beasley was so bad last year. I think Houston fans are confused because he made some shots.
Yes.
He took the fourth most shots per 100 possessions of any player in the league, averaging more than 15. He took the fourth shots per 100 possessions. That's crazy. That is unprecedented and shocking. And so I think it's fair to say that he wasn't a net positive, especially when you look at his perp. You know, the Rockets were worse on both offense and defense with him in the lineup. So, you know, there just wasn't a lot that he brought to the table. And without that, I don't think that him going to Milwaukee is going to hurt the team at all. I think it's a good move for the Rockets once again.
Yeah, I think that a lot of people around the NBA, but especially Rockets fans, there's a fixation on depth charts because right now, technically, with Monty Unis not signed, your backup to Ryan Anderson is probably Montrezl Harrell. But I mean, truth be told, one, Monty Unis is probably coming back. But otherwise, you could sign someone off the street. You know, you could make a Carl Landry level signing, and that's going to be better than Michael Beasley. So just because you had Beasley plugged in as your number two on a depth chart, that doesn't really mean that much in terms of his, you know, his net positive, what he would bring to a team. The other thing about Ennis, again, I know him simply from Syracuse and his college scouting report. I haven't watched him much in the NBA. What I've seen is that he's a decent pick-and-roll point guard. Is he at all a good fit for D'Antoni? I saw one stat that his shooting improved down the stretch of last year. Is that true at all?
Yeah, he showed some signs of improvement, small sample, so we'll have to see. I think D'Antoni's system, he could be good. If they can find someone for him to roll with, I think it's going to be the bigger issue for them. But if he can find someone for him to work with consistently, you know, he's reaching that point in his career where he may forget how to run pick and roll more effectively in general, and that's really going to help him, I think, at this point in his career. So I think there's some upside here for the Rockets. I think it's, again, with them giving up Beasley, who is just, you know, wasn't even on roster to start the year, it's a great move for them to be able to get return on him.
Sure. Now we'll switch back to the main point, what I was going to have you on, which was your excellent piece yesterday about James Harden, just a deep dive into where he is entering his age 27 season. And before we get into the specifics of where I think we agree or disagree, I think one universal thing that I think all sides can agree on, and we can start with this, should be an absolutely massive year for James Harden, because the counterpoints that Harden's defenders would make, and I would make some of them to your article, you know, the counterpoints would be, well, you know, he's been relatively young, he's had such a high usage rate on offense because of the lack of secondary playmakers behind him, he had the bad ankle injury to start last year, so he came in not in great fitness, but you know what, yeah, he's in his age 27 season, he's got more help on offense with Anderson and Eric Gordon, he seems to be in peak physical fitness. So the bottom line is there's no excuses anymore. You know, even if the excuses had any validity at all, is it fair to say that this is a put up or shut up year for James when it comes to his overall game?
Yeah, I think so. I think also when you look at it, is he going to get along with D'Antoni? You know, I think that to a degree, Harden's got to be able to prove that as a superstar, he can be coached like this, because that's been, you know, there hasn't been any sort of glaring issues with him and Kevin McHale or last year, but I do think that there is a certain degree of leadership that's been lacking. He really needs to set the tone. He needs to show that he can contribute more than just points and assists. He needs to be able to show that those intangible things, which are very hard to quantify, and in a league that has a lot of quantifiable measures,
yeah,
you know, those are the things that he has to showcase this year. He's got to be able to prove that that's what he can bring to the table, because otherwise, you know, he's just another guy that's able to put up lots of points but isn't going to help you get where you want to go. Now, they've won a lot of games in Houston when he's been around. They've won a lot of games with him, and he does help you win. But I think especially if he lets D'Antoni help him, he can be great. But D'Antoni's going to meet him halfway, and Harden's going to meet D'Antoni halfway. They've got to come to the middle to be able to do what they can. If that happens, they can be phenomenal. They can really do something incredible next season offensively, but you're going to have to see that kind of commitment from the heart, and it's going to have to be there from day one.
Yep.
James can't work himself into shape. He can't save himself for the playoff. Like, don't go full bore. Don't wear yourself out, but at least give enough to where you're going to be able to contribute meaningfully and help them win games. And that precedent of effort has to be there from the very start.
Yep. I want to start with some of the finer points, and we'll start with the defense, because I know that's the bad, and I know that's what a lot of Rockets fans are curious about. I know you watched a lot of tape for this piece that you put up on CBSSports.com, and I'm curious what you saw. I know the obvious weakness is transition defense and his effort there, but I'm more curious about the half court. Is it on the ball? Is it away from the ball? Basically, where are his deficiencies most glaring, at least this past season?
He struggles in two main areas of his, in the half court, I would say. From what I saw, he's tremendously bad in offensive rebound areas. So if there's any, he just abandoned his guy to go out there in terms of defensive rebounding for him. He gives up a huge number of offensive rebounds because he's just not jumping. He's just watching his guy in front of him go out there and do it. On ball, there's some good stuff. Like isolation, he's fine. And pick and roll, he's okay and pretty good. Spot up is where he gets in trouble. He watches the ball a lot, and that shows up in the allowing the offensive rebounds as well, where oftentimes he's just watching the ball go up in the air and not actively going to get it, and that causes problems for them. Those are the two main areas. He just loses guys sometimes. Now, sometimes it's not his fault, whether it's miscommunication or problems in their various areas, but I think in general for him, those are the two places that he's just got to do a better job of watching the ball, of not watching the ball and focusing on, being the kind of defender that stays locked in with the greater concept and not just what's immediately in front of him.
Yeah. One positive thing, and I'm curious how it kind of plays with Harden. You had a mention of Eric Gordon in your piece. Of course, you touched about the changes to the Rockets in the offseason, and you actually said that Gordon showed some things defensively last year. And that kind of stuck out to me because, admittedly, I have not watched that much film of Eric Gordon. I watched him when the Pelicans played the Rockets. Of course, I've seen the highlight tapes, but I just know some of the overall defensive numbers were bad. And so a lot of people have been kind of skittish about how Gordon and Harden play together. And I was just curious if you could elaborate a little bit on, what the positive things you saw from Gordon defensively and, if Gordon and Harden are at all playable together.
He can attack the ball. I think they can play together. I think they can actually be pretty good. Gordon showed some ability last season to get over screens, which is very, very big. If you're able to do that, it helps disrupt the pick and roll. He is able to do some disruptive things. He's a disruptive guy on ball in particular. And that really, I think, can help with what they're trying to do this season. I think that that's an area where he can really make a difference with them, especially with what he brings offensively. So I think Gordon and Harden can work together. I liked what I saw from Gordon last year defensively. He's not gonna stop you. He's so small.
Yeah.
There's still areas. But overall, I think there's a real high capability for Gordon to at least not be terrible.
Okay. That's good. I want to go back to the leadership theme that you kind of led off with, and of course it runs throughout your piece on Harden. And you talked about Trevor Ariza and Corey Brewer. Those are two guys who had unexpected regressions last year. My favorite line of your piece, by the way, was the Corey Brewer is a gambler, but he's still a pest, and he became a little boy wandering aimlessly around the mall looking for his mother, which was a pretty fair assessment of Corey at times last year. But I'm just curious, how much blame can you assign to Harden on that? I know that overall, of course, he's the best player on the team, so he sets the tone. I'm just curious how you view the line and, what Harden's responsible for and what he's not.
Part of it is I've learned how much power structures exist in locker rooms. And so when there is that kind of dynamic in play, it matters.
Okay.
That really matters when you have a dynamic in terms of a power structure. When the best player on the team really does set the example the way that he does, I know that if that guy's not locked in, it can cause real problems. So I think it's fair to criticize him and wonder exactly what impact he had on the team and whether or not that really did kind of give the issues that kind of started. Because it's part of it is you're filling in blanks, right? Where
yeah.
Trevor Ariza was a good defender, and Trevor Ariza was a good defender, and Corey Brewer was at least not a horrendous one, if not a strong one. So what happened there? And you look at Harden, you watch how it went, and it's hard to see that there wasn't some sort of cost of the way that Harden approached the game and the level of effort he declined to give that impacting them and limiting what they could do. I think the players hold themselves responsible. They're all professionals. They've got to do their own jobs. And Harden, they don't have the kind of offensive role that Harden does. But at the same time, I think that Harden's unwillingness to commit himself on that end really did cause issues. It wasn't so much scheme. It really wasn't. It wasn't like he was disrupting things and being the huge problem. It was that you saw oftentimes the players being, you know, just their entire effort was lacking.
Yeah.
You're going to need if you're going to play NBA.
Yeah. Since you brought up kind of the locker room structure, I've got a theory that I wanted to float by you that I've just kind of silently wondered to myself the last couple of months. Obviously, with leadership in the NBA, not everybody gets born into it. For every alpha dog like Kobe or KG, you've got someone like Dirk that just kind of evolves into it. And as far as the Rockets are concerned, here's where I'm going with this. If you watch the team closely since 2013, and Matt, I know you and I definitely have, imagine if you judge the Rockets 100% by body language. And where I'm going with that is ignore the basketball, just focus on the communication on the court, off the court, in the locker room, the press conferences, and just ask yourself, who was the face of the franchise? Who's the guy that asks or answers the tough media questions for better or for worse? And for me, my view here in Houston is that it's been Dwight Howard. The Rockets sold Dwight on being that guy when they went after him in July 2013. He wanted that role. He's done it. He's been the rah-rah leader. He's been the organizer. And really, it's been Dwight's franchise, even though Harden was clearly the better player. And my take has been that Harden isn't really naturally that rah-rah type of guy, so he's happy to sit in the shadows and let Dwight be that guy. And Dwight, after all the PR hits he took in Orlando and LA, he wanted to rebuild his image and just mold the team with him as the leader, like the old Orlando days. But now that Dwight's gone, I'm not going to be the Houston homer saying that losing Dwight is addition by subtraction. He's a great player, good guy in the locker room. But my theory is this. Now that Dwight is not here, there's no more questions as to whose franchise it is. It's James Harden's team, sink or swim, because Ryan Anderson is sure as hell not going to fill that void. So, as someone who follows the Rockets, it just feels like to me that Harden has started to take more ownership the last couple of months. And he still has a ton to prove, but I'm wondering if Dwight leaving, maybe that can be a catalyst to, you know, push Harden to take more ownership, because really now he has no choice. Is that at all a fair assessment?
Yeah, I don't think these are things that guys grow into. I think it takes them a while. And, you know, we'll see. I think Harden has the capacity to be very good in that role. We'll have to see what he does. But I think he can be very, very good in that role. A lot of it's going to depend. Is he going to be like Carmelo Anthony, who leads by example and doesn't want to commit himself to being vocal at all? Or does he commit himself in more tangible ways and really make the kind of impact that he needs to? So, you know, I think this is a big year, like we talked about, in terms of leadership for him. He's going to have to be that face of the franchise. He's going to have to be that guy. He's going to have to give on more levels than just offensive efficiency. And that, I think, is going to be a huge determining factor for him.
Yeah. One positive thing, because we've certainly dwelled on a lot of the negatives, as far as the upside of it, you mentioned that his offense, UCM, is still underrated because there's certainly a big portion of NBA Twitter that hears James Harden and they just say, you know, foul magnet, flopper, whatever else. And, you know, you said to a lot of NBA fans, he's incredibly underrated. So after watching all the film, just, you know, in short, what are the things that stood out about James as an offensive player?
I actually didn't even get to write that as much as I wanted to. He is an incredible playmaker. His vision is very, very good. He's got such control on the pick and roll. He's 90th percentile in the pick and roll overall, the ball handler, and that includes a lot of players that didn't do as much. So his sample size to be able to have that kind of efficiency is just remarkable. On top of it, he's obviously a great shooter. His moves are very good, but there's also in the pick and roll, he has such control. He's able to make such great reads. He's got great chemistry with Clint Capella that I think is going to really translate this season. He's a willing playmaker. He's a great finisher. That Euro step of his is really dangerous. And the fact that he doesn't get credit for drawing fouls infuriates me. As much of against flopping as anybody, but it needs to be noted how good he is at drawing contact. And when he's locked in, finishing through it. So I think that those are the kind of areas that he deserves more credit in. We know him as this great scorer. We know him as this great shooter. And yes, he gets to the line. But his body control and the way that he's able to manipulate the defense into doing what he wants is really remarkable.
Yeah. A few things I'll throw in very quickly just as we wrap this up about the team as a whole. You had an intriguing post the other day, I thought, about the Rockets, this year's team, kind of being a test of the good to great theory. Explain what that means for people who might not be aware.
There's this management book that talks about the idea of being good to great, and how the idea is that instead of trying to fix all the things that are wrong with your company, take the thing that you do well and be absolutely great at it. And if you do that, then that's going to help you more than trying to fix all of the myriad problems that you have. You can resolve those things once you're great. But if you're really great at something, that's going to take you further than anything else. So with the Rockets, you know, don't try and be a top 10 defense. Just be decent. Just be not absolutely horrible and let your offense take you home. Your offense lives up to the potential that it has. You know, the sky's the limit. There's absolutely nothing that anybody's going to be able to stop them. So I think that to me is kind of an interesting idea of what the Rockets could do this season in focusing on the offense and really making it so elite, and then, you know, having the defense be more of a long-term proposition that you try and find the answers for.
Yeah. Overall record, I've seen you on Twitter being a little more down on them than most. You're mentioning basically the question, can they win more with their offense than they lose more with your defense? I know you mentioned that the track record of D'Antoni and his previous stops and players saying they don't necessarily practice defense. Just curious your pessimism, because I know a lot of analysts have been hitting all week saying that the Rockets 41.5, that over-under win total, saying take the over. And you, not that you're saying under, but you've kind of said tap the brakes. Just explain your pessimism a little bit.
We don't know if he's going to get along with D'Antoni.
Okay.
We don't know if the depth is going to be a problem. We don't know if Clint Capela is ready to step into that kind of a role. We don't know if Trevor Ariza is going to bounce back or continue to struggle. We don't know how the depth is going to work out. We don't know. A lot of D'Antoni. We just don't know. We have not seen in a long time a D'Antoni team be successful.
Yeah.
And that has to factor into our analysis to a degree. It's just been so long since a team with D'Antoni at the helm has won more than 44 games. I think you have to be pessimistic going in and say, until they show that they can give the necessary effort to defense, you have to be skeptical of their chances of making huge strides.
Yeah. Just, I'm going to give you the optimistic case real quick, and just, you know, if you squint at it, tell me if you can see a little bit of a difference. Obviously, they've hired Jeff Bezdelic, who's basically the defensive coordinator. The top two targets they went after in free agency were Kent Bazemore and Al Horford. Now, of course, they were unsuccessful in that, but it doesn't feel exclusively like a typical D'Antoni franchise from some of his previous stops, you know, because it does look like Daryl Morey is putting at least some emphasis on defense. Is it fair to at least take some optimism out of those signs?
If you ignore every other team that D'Antoni has run and how we've heard the same thing out of them, then yes. The problem is we just hear this a lot.
Okay.
We just hear this a lot from them, that they're going to, you know, that this is going to be the end of us. Now, with New York, it did happen when he had Mike Brown as his defensive coordinator. It did happen. So there is a precedent for it working. But we hear about this time and time and time again because everyone knows it's an issue. Until we see it, you have to remain skeptical, I think, at least if you're an outside perspective. I think if you're a fan, buy in absolutely, but the outside perspective has to be, I think, a little bit more skeptical.
Okay. Last question, and then I'll let you go. It's a fun one. Rockets fans on Twitter, you interact with a lot of fan bases, and I know you and the Rockets have always had a interesting relationship, Rockets fans, I mean. I think there's one guy out there now, Paul, a.k.a. Rockets Intellect, who seems to be simultaneously your biggest fan and your biggest critic. Tell me your thoughts on Rockets fans. Have they mellowed out any since the Harden MVP run a couple of years ago? Or tell me whatever you think of first when you hear Rockets fans on Twitter.
They're endlessly optimistic, which I appreciate. They always believe that things are going to turn around. You know, I think that they're passionate. I think they're a great fan base. I have a soft spot in my heart for the Rockets franchise. Just from growing up being a Rockets fan in the 94 team. I love that 94 team. So I think, you know, they're a passionate fan base. I appreciate them. I do think that they just kind of get swept up in things. They just get really caught up in what's going on. Like, oh, no, this is totally sustainable. But, well, have a little bit of perspective on what's going on. And, you know, like last year it was, oh, no, Josh Smith, no, really, why can't this work?
Yeah.
He's not good. He's he's not good. Same thing with Michael Beasley. So, in general, though, I like talking to Rockets fans. I love Texas, so that helps.
Yes.
I'm a big fan of the fan base, and I want good things to the team. I also think Daryl Morey is still an underrated GM, despite of all his accolades. So, I want good things for them. They won't chill out, but they shouldn't chill out. That's what fans do. They don't chill out. That's how they should.
Yeah. All right, that's Matt Moore. You can follow him on Twitter at HP Basketball. And, well, he had a great piece this week, always writes a ton of good stuff for CBS Sports about why James Harden is both underrated and overrated at the same time. Matt, thank you so much for the time, man.
Thank you.
That's Matt Moore of CBS. Excellent, excellent takes, I thought. Even if they're a little pessimistic, it's a good reminder for why Rockets fans need to be grounded, need to have level expectations. Again, you can follow him on Twitter at HPBasketball, where he's funny, engaging, one of the best follows in the NBA universe with all sorts of insight and entertaining commentary. You can also follow his professional account at Matt Moore CBS, where you'll get to see all the excellent journalism he does for CBSSports.com. Really glad to have him on relatively short notice, not just to talk about his Harden piece, which went up this week, but as we were taping, we had news of the Michael Beasley-Tyler Ennis trade to talk about. So we covered a lot of ground. I don't want to keep y'all any longer, so I'm going to wrap it up here. Again, this is Locked On Rockets. You can follow the show on Twitter at Locked On Rockets. You can follow me on Twitter at Ben Dubose. And you can email us at lockdownrockets@gmail.com if you'd like to ask us any questions or to inquire about becoming a sponsor for this great show. Because today's show, well, it's brought to you by SeatGeek. Download their mobile app for the easiest way to buy tickets. And that promo code LORockets gets you a $20 rebate off of your first purchase. So again, thanks to SeatGeek. And if you would like to advertise your business just as SeatGeek does, please let us know at lockdownrockets@gmail.com. So on that note, time to sign off, and we will be back with you tomorrow for Media Day at Toyota Center. Welcome to the new season, guys.